Allora, buongiorno a tutti, grazie di essere qui. E questo vuole essere un panel sulla fantascienza cinese. Ho chiesto prima se faccio la parte magari introduttiva in italiano e poi farò la parte in inglese insieme a Frank Ma, con cui avremo una diciamo, discussione, una conversazione sulla... Sì. Sulla sua attività di fondatore e presidente della Fondazione per la crescita della fantascienza di Shenzhen. Dunque, allora, molti di voi avranno intercettato questo fenomeno della fantascienza cinese, che è sempre più visibile e consistente a livello globale e anche in Italia. Ma perché fa così? So io che fa sbalta, è lui che fa, tu che fa casino. Okay. Anche in Italia si sta apposta, allora, giusto? Non reagisci. Va bene. Anche in Italia si stanno pubblicando sempre più libri, in parte diciamo legati al successo di Liu Cixin, del problema dei tre corpi, e in parte grazie diciamo anche al lavoro di scouting e di costruzione di alcuni progetti su Future Fiction e su Robot, che anche ha pubblicato alcuni racconti di Hao Jingfang, per esempio, e di Ken Liu, che vabbè, poi ne parleremo magari un po' meglio. Allora, di fatto, vabbè, questo lo salto perché tanto sapete già, non era questa l'idea. Ma questa era, ma è quella Cina, era questa? Vabbè, allora mi sono sbagliato io, vabbè. No, è che ho fatto casino io, cioè, no, è quella, ma c'è prima tutta la parte di grafica che salto. Ma perché c'è tutta sta... Vabbè. Allora. Colpa mia, colpa mia, colpa mia. Colpa mia. No, è quella. No, ci arriviamo. Ah, stai bloccando. Dai, dai, dai. Posso andare avanti? Ecco. Ok, eccola qua. Allora, quello che sta succedendo in Cina in questo momento è che dopo alcuni anni di alti e bassi, ovviamente la rivoluzione culturale, quello che è successo dopo, la fantascienza ha sempre avuto dei momenti di grande espansione e di rallentamenti. Dovuti al fatto che la narrativa di speculazione, la narrativa fantascientifica è stata percepita in vari modi. In un primo momento è stata supportata perché serviva un approccio di tipo divulgativo, di promozione delle innovazioni tecnologiche, di diffusione di quello che stava avvenendo magari nel resto del mondo a livello tecnologico, anche in Cina. Per cui anche sulla spinta di un approccio di tipo, diciamo, simil sovietico, per cui la fantascienza veniva utilizzata come elemento di educazione, alfabetizzazione alle nuove generazioni di quelle che potevano essere gli sviluppi tecnologici. In seguito invece l'elemento di contaminazione, di inquinamento culturale che la fantascienza portava, essendo tradotta soprattutto dall'inglese, quindi anche fantascienza americana e francese, ha subito poi un rallentamento, no? Perché la fantascienza, gli scrittori di fantascienza sono stati tacciati di in qualche modo inquinare quella che è la purezza del pensiero filosofico, del pensiero politico e narrativo e tutto quanto quello che concerne l'idea di cultura cinese. Dopo diciamo, l'apertura di nuovo verso gli inizi del 2000, la fantascienza ha ripreso quota, in una maniera un po' particolare, nel senso che esistono due anime in questo momento nella fantascienza e negli ultimi anni, negli ultimi 10-15 anni. Una fantascienza, diciamo, chiamiamola filogovernativa, anche se il termine è un pochino forte, cioè comunque una fantascienza che ricalca un po' gli stilemi della fantascienza classica americana, quindi un sostanziale ottimismo, un sostanziale positivismo, una sostanziale visione costruttiva, entusiastica, legata alla propulsività dell'economia e della crescita e dello sviluppo cinese, che ha comunque affrancato circa 80 milioni di anche di più, 200 milioni di poveri nel corso di pochissimi anni. Per cui ovviamente queste persone vedono nella tecnologia un elemento di libertà, un elemento di arricchimento fisico, materiale e anche, no, immateriale. Ora, accanto a questa, negli ultimi anni c'è stata anche un tipo di fantascienza che invece guarda con sospetto a questo sviluppo. E quindi, se da una parte abbiamo un autore come Liu Cixin, che rappresenta al massimo questo tipo di fantascienza positiva, fantascienza tradizionale, dall'altra parte abbiamo un personaggio come Han Song, che invece guarda alla fantascienza con un occhio più critico, guarda allo sviluppo tecnologico con una analisi un po' più approfondita, o almeno con un accento anche a quelle che sono le possibili derive, le possibili distopie legate all'applicazione di certi progetti. In particolare, forse avrete sentito parlare di questo credito sociale, di questo indice sociale per cui alcune persone che si comportano bene ottengono degli sconti sui mutui, ottengono delle promozioni, e quelli che si comportano male non sono in grado di prendere un treno o un aereo. Quindi la famosa puntata Nosedive di Black Mirror in Cina è già una realtà, e la stanno applicando su prima è stato un esercizio di tipo cittadino, adesso magari cominciano ad applicarlo in altri ambiti. Di fatto l'abbiamo anche noi, alla patente a punti, però applicata a tutti gli aspetti della vita diventa un po' più complesso. E One Belt, One Road, avete tutti ben chiaro quello che è successo questa settimana a Roma con l'arrivo di Xi Jinping. Di fatto la Via della Seta può essere considerato un progetto fantascientifico fino a 20 anni fa. Di fatto, ecco, si sta creando questa grande linea che unirà Xi'an in Cina a vari hub europei. Ecco questo. Ah, questo qua, ok. Questo è, vabbè, mi piace ricordarlo, insomma, che la Cina è il più grande paese, diciamo, inquinatore al mondo, ma è anche quello che sta investendo di più nelle energie rinnovabili. Quindi sono in questo momento la causa e la speranza di tanti elementi legati ai cambiamenti climatici. Speriamo appunto che con l'uscita degli Stati Uniti dagli accordi internazionali la Cina possa perlomeno riprendere un pochino, riportare un pochino questo discorso. Non lo so, è tutto molto dinamico in questo momento, però di fatto hanno la potenza e la visionarietà per questi pannelli solari, non è un panda. E quindi, insomma, cose anche un pochino fantasiose. E anche questo, ovviamente, ci sono tantissimi progetti di sviluppo legati alla bioarchitettura, legati alle smart cities. Quest'anno spero di andare a Shenzhen per una biennale di arte moderna legata proprio al concetto di smart cities, dove il professor Wu Yan avrà una sezione dedicata alla fantascienza, perché di fatto qualcosa abbiamo fatto come scrittori di fantascienza per immaginare le città del futuro. Allora, questo andiamo un po'. Ma non va più avanti. Quello sotto. Ok. Quindi, diciamo, negli ultimi 3-4 anni ho pubblicato varie antologie di fantascienza cinese con il supporto dell'Istituto Confucio di Milano e di Pisa. e nel corso di questi 3 anni ho invitato il professor Buyen, Xia Jia e Chen Chufan in Italia per alcuni incontri con studenti, in librerie, alle fiere del libro. La fantascienza cinese, tanti mi chiedono che cosa avrebbe di diverso da quella che abbiamo sempre letto. Una domanda a cui non è facile rispondere, ma a Book Pride la settimana scorsa mi hanno chiesto che cosa ha in comune la fantascienza cinese con quella nostrana, chiamiamo quella a cui siamo uno più avvezzi, e questa mi sembra una domanda più pertinente, nel senso che mi piace più mettere in luce le cose in comune che non le cose i punti di diversità. Di fatto parliamo sempre di una storia, parliamo sempre del fatto che c'è un elemento, un'innovazione, una svolta narrativa che poi viene portata avanti con dei personaggi, quindi di fatto raccontarci delle storie ha sempre a che fare con elementi di narratologia che sono quelli. Ovviamente se voi andate, spesso faccio questa metafora, se voi andate in un ristorante cinese, un ristorante indiano, un ristorante spagnolo, cambiano gli ingredienti, mangiate sempre delle portate, ma ovviamente quello che vi arriva, il gusto che vi arriva, l'intensità, quello che c'è dietro agli ingredienti è completamente diverso. Quindi la differenza sono quelle, sono gli ingredienti, sono il fatto per esempio che spesso le storie cinesi non sono lineari ma sono ricorsive. Spesso l'unità di base è la famiglia o elementi legati alla famiglia, spesso ci sono rimandi agli usi e costumi, le tradizioni, le leggende, i miti di 2000+ anni di storia cinese. Tutte queste cose rendono la fantascienza cinese una grandissima novità nel panorama internazionale, che è sempre stato legato a un punto di vista. Che cosa hanno in comune? In comune hanno appunto le stesse ansie di un paese come la Cina, che è altamente tecnologico, altamente industrializzato, che invecchia molto rapidamente, che ha enormi problemi ambientali, enormi problemi di tipo di ridistribuzione del reddito, enormi problemi politici, di tipo anche molto chiaramente legati alla censura, ai temi cosiddetti sensibili. Tutti elementi che lo rendono utopico, distopico e quello che c'è in mezzo. Quindi di fatto siamo in un'ottica assolutamente omogenea a quella, diciamo, ci sono tutti i semi per produrre ottime storie. Di fatto producono ottime storie. In Nebula ho raccolto 4 dei più grandi scrittori di fantascienza cinese, che sono Liu Cixin, Chen Chufan, Xia Jia e il professor Buyen. E in Sinosfera ne ho pubblicati 5, che sono Wang Jingkang, Bao Shu, Han Song, Fan Yilun, che è una giovane, o Yilun Fan, adesso non mi ricordo mai il nome e cognome, quale viene prima, quale dopo, e Tang Fei. Stiamo per fare una terza antologia che si chiamerà Artificina, con altri 5 racconti di autori più o meno giovani. E ecco, questo era un po' quello che abbiamo fatto su Nebula. E abbiamo portato comunque alla WorkCon di Helsinki, abbiamo fatto un panel sulla fantascienza cinese anche lì, e poi invece questo è il tour del professor Wu, e tanti incontri che abbiamo fatto ormai 2 anni fa su Nebula, e il libro è andato molto bene. Questo mese Nebula è stato scelto da Amazon come offerta del mese, e quindi insomma sta continuando a macinare lettori e lettrici. E questa è Sinosfera, dove diciamo l'idea è quella di allargare un po' la sfera cinese anche ad autori che sono magari fuori dalla cerchia più ristretta dei grandi scrittori di fantascienza. Quindi ci sono tanti giovani come ops, ecco, ho sbagliato, stavo dire, che è successo? Ah, ecco, come lei, è un'attrice molto giovane. Questa è Han Song, l'autore di cui vi parlavo prima. Ok, e poi abbiamo invitato Chen Chufan, ha fatto un tour in Italia, quindi l'abbiamo portato anche Rai 4, Wonderland, insomma è stata una bella esperienza al Confucio di Pisa. Niente, va bene, questo era per dire che adesso vorrei un po' preparare il discorso per quello che sarà e quello che sta facendo anche Frank Ma, che ho conosciuto l'anno scorso a Shenzhen, dove abbiamo fatto un bel incontro e lui mi ha fatto vedere i prototipi e tutti i brevetti che ha sviluppato con la sua fondazione, azienda, e poi parleremo un po' di quello che è la Science Fiction Growth Foundation. Please, Frank, come. So this is yours, okay? Okay. This is so. Please, very very glad that you're here, and I've prepared some questions. But first of all, I put this. Okay. First of all, I wanted to thank you to be here. I still remember. When we met the first time in Shenzhen and you showed me all the prototypes and all the appliances that were shown on top of the building, remember that? That was kind of link between how technology can affect science fiction, and I still remember that we had the discussion, and you told me that the Chinese people need imagination, mm-hmm. and that this tool is very difficult to grasp, to understand how you develop imagination. I've been asked this question by many media journalists in China because it looks like the children, the new generation. They need this tool to compete on a world level with other, let's say, I'm not saying science fiction markets, but in general, some other markets, okay? So my first question is, why did you create the Science Fiction Growth Foundation?
Thank you for your question. My name's Frank Ma. I'm the founder of the Science and Fantasy Growth Foundation in China. I'm so happy to be here in Fuji to meet friends, the sci-fi friends in Italy. Thank you for inviting us. Well, to answer your first question, the back forward to 5 years ago when I attended a sci-fi award meeting in Shanghai, and I met a few writers like Liu Cixin, Wang Jingkang, and other younger generation writers. Then a month later, I attend another sci-fi award in Beijing, and to my surprise, I met almost the same group of the writers. So I began to notice that there might be a small sci-fi writers circle in China, compared with the number of sci-fi writers in US and compared with the numbers of readers in US and China. And the sci-fi writers in China is barely small and less than 10 at that time, less than 10. They could still get their work published. So only a handful of writers still was active in the circle, and most of them are part-time writers because they couldn't get higher pay than other kind of writers in China. And the worst situation was less and less younger writers would like to write sci-fi books. It seems a business problem, but no money and nobody want to write, but I thought it will trigger another social problem, that our next generation will be reading less sci-fi books and losing imagination. That's the problem. Meanwhile, it's not a responsibility for local government or school or even a publishing company or movie company. There must be something that I can do for the future. So starting from that time, I try to find a solution to that problem. It's not a personal one, it's not an industrial one, it's a social one. So I always said the social question, a social problem needs to be fixed by social resources. So on the March of the 2015, me and other co-founders like Zhang Ran, the sci-fi writers and IT engineering, VC investors and journalists and some social works. We both are sci-fi fans and came together to form the first and the only non-profit foundations in China that supported the industry of sci-fi. But to my surprise, the first donation was come from the local government agency.
So there's no way to escape that, right? So it looks like the interest in the interest in science fiction from the government is very strong. When I was at the convention last year when I was in the convention in, last year in Chengdu, I've seen really a big thing. And the organization, the guy there told me, yeah, we went to ask some money to the local government and we needed $200,000, but the local government said, let's make 400 because this is important. So this is this.
The story of China government.
Yes, so when we went to the convention, it was all free for everybody. It was a very beautiful renovated industrial area. There were like dancers and singers and special effects and traditional dances and.
It's kind of like a festival.
Yes,
right?
It's like a really big thing, and I was so enthusiastic. But then. As a back thought and in my mind, it was something like, but after they spend too much money, what do they expect? What do they want back from science fiction writers? You know, we are just writing. We're not really changing the future directly. So this started to, you know, be like a little thought about that we are not really looking at when you receive a gift from somebody, no? Is it really a gift or there is something behind it? And then when I talked to Chen Chufan last year, he said, yes, that's true because also this money can come very easily and easily can go away. So we have to take it as soon as it comes in our hands and do the best we can with this money. It's a tricky, no? It's a bit tricky. So far, so good. I mean, the support, I personally receive funding from Hanban, from the Ministry of Culture. Not directly, but indirectly from the Confucio Institute, which is the institutes in Italy and in the rest of the world that promote Chinese culture. I don't want to go into that. But I want to ask you, what do you do to support and help science fiction writers and publishers?
Actually, we did very simple things. We help them through the annual. Morningstar Champion from the writer side, we sponsor money to the writers that they have to finish the writings on time, but they don't have to worry about the living expenses. when writing a book. But of course, we have a professional community of judges, including Liu Cixin, Wang Jingkang. They read their books, they read their works, or just summaries to see whether this guy that we're going to sponsor had the right person to be good and talents to, you know, have to be a good writers in the future. And to the publisher side, we deliver good sci-fi works to them so that they can deliver more sci-fi books in the market. And they don't have to buy the copyright from other countries, you know. And that means it can save some costs. And, you know, meanwhile, supporting the local writers. For the past 4 years, we've sponsored over 1 million RMB to over 60 writers and artists, and 18 books got published.
Well, that's for me personally, and I think for most of the people here, that's really science fiction. That's really something unheard of in this land.
Yeah, I know.
It's I've met many people, all from the science fiction field, whether they're more related to the government, like Science Fiction World, where you know that is the only magazine that is owned by the Communist Party. So they right. They really are.
But we are not.
You're not. That's why I'm. This is the important development, is the growth of private funded projects. So not just from the state, but also from business angels, private investors, capital venture. This looks very strange, I know, but the path is clear. The path is that, and you know, it's not just science fiction; it's much more than that. But is China wants to move from being an importer of ideas to be an exporter of ideas. I want to move from being an importer of, being an exporter of hard power to be an exporter of soft power. And with soft power, I mean stories, storytelling, culture, right? So the first step, of course, is the imagination, because without the imagination, you are doomed to live always the same present. Imagination is the tool that creates something new. And from then, stories start. Stories that talk about present, past, and future. In this moment, we're dealing with the future. But the link between the industry and the other sectors, like the publishing sector, is now talking much more to the movie sector. You heard about The Wandering Earth, probably. It was a big blast in Christmas, in springtime. $300 million.
More than that, 46 something.
$600 million.
Oh, dollars, I'm talking.
Yeah, I'm talking dollars.
Oh, dollars.
Yeah, it's okay. It was one of the biggest success in China, I think, right? And they are linking everything, and then you have a workflow of stories coming. That means that the industry might be small, because as you said, it's not so big at the moment. I've seen probably the fandom. Of course, they have a lot of people, so that's nothing you can do about that. So whenever you have a meeting, there's like hundreds of young people. But in general, it's perceived as a very small niche in all the other compared to the market. So my question is, what do you think will be the next steps? Where do you see the Science Fiction Growth Foundation in the next 5 or 10 years?
Well, Well, we don't have a clear plan, but about future 10 years, but we do have a clear goal, is to inspire people with imagination and creation by offering more sci-fi, science and fantasy works. But to achieve that, the SGF, they need to attract more tenants to join our team. I'm expecting SGFs, it's getting more internationalized. We currently only have a representative in North France.
Oh, the Utopia. Yeah.
Yes, to coordinate with local government agency and local science, arts, education organizations. We did host activities, including sci-fi forums, sci-fi arts exhibitions, both in Shenzhen, China, and Nantes, France, last year. We will keep in doing that within future 10 years. We also put forward and facilitate Shenzhen and Nantes government to sign friendly city memos. So I'm thinking maybe we have opportunities, you know, to cooperate with the local organization in Italy.
Yeah, I hope so. I think it's the right time. It's really perfect time with Xi Jinping coming coming to sign these agreements. I see that there's many signs, not just in China, but everywhere in the world, that people want more diversity. I don't like to use this term. I said it last day, because it's a term that implies a standard of diversity from somebody else, which is set normally by the usual point of view, which I prefer to talk about fair distribution of futures, fair distribution of stories across the globe. That means not having any particular point from where the stories must come, but being aware that the future happens everywhere, and then we must capture the quality wherever it happens. So the big problem, of course, is the translation again. So we all use this English as a lingua franca, you know, as a way to understand each other. But we cannot go on using one single language to tell all the stories of the world. So I am personally investing all my life and almost all my money in translation, because there's a big loss in diversity every time we lose a language, every time we lose a culture, and especially in this time where finally somebody is realizing that biodiversity, climate change, it is an issue. I think it's more relevant that we push this. At the Worldcon, finally, this term world started to mean something, because for many years, the Worldcon was, again, always in the US, always in English, always revolving around American and English writers. So now, finally, that the Worldcon is moving a bit more than before, going to Helsinki, going to, you know, other country, Dublin, yes, it's in Europe at least, but of course is an English-speaking country.
Go back to 20 years ago, they had a...
Japan.
No, Chengdu, 20 years ago.
20 years ago? One?
More than 20 years ago.
I know that that Chengdu, yeah, I know Chengdu is bidding for 2024, the Worldcon. I think you're ready. You are more than ready. I've seen the conventions that you do in China, and it's absolutely professional, up to the standards. The problem is political, I think, as usual. I think a lot of people will not vote for that. But I think this system crumbling, I see it really falling down. It's just a matter of the speed of this fall, because more and more panels are proposed on other languages. It's difficult. Of course, they're fighting back. They're fighting back, and Liu Cixin knows this very well, because he won the award because of the Sad Puppies movement. So he would not have won anything if that wasn't the case. Back to the question I wanted to make you. Science fiction now, as Han Song said, for example, you just open a window in China and you see the future. Is it really like that? Is it really that technology is transforming the life of the people, or is it just an illusion? Is it just that the richer are getting richer and the poor are always trying to chase this dream?
From my point of view, that I would say sci-fi is the fiction of technology time, not the illusion. Well, I have two examples. In 1965, Jules Verne wrote a moon landing from a space gun in his novel From the Earth to the Moon. And then 1969, Neil Armstrong with Apollo 11 successfully landed in the moon. And the second example is in 1968, 2001, A Space Odyssey, the classic sci-fi movie released. Then the following 50 years till now, the science fiction scenes in the movie were made into reality one by one, including man landing, space station, voice print recognition, video call, table PC, and AI chess player, right? So science fiction made the prediction of future. Or we can say, or scientists or engineering encouraged by the idea of sci-fi. The human's ability of imagination and creation can make us go further in the universe. I've worked for IT company. I see a very interesting relationship between imagination and creation. That is, image first, and then something finally be created. That seems a natural law. A natural law
which now is enhanced, augmented by the artificial means that we have. So I'm always asking myself, where do the nature ends and our artificial desire, our artificial tools, our artificial essence starts? Because now this is a dual relationship, and we cannot do one without the other. So I'm more interested in this kind of scenarios. This is what I'm really interested about. But yeah, this is off the records. Okay, off the.
Going to talk about politics.
Well, no, but I just wanted to say. Because you know, the science fiction I prefer anyway, the one that we really really remember is the science fiction that changes the perception of reality, and sometimes it gets political. You know, sometimes it gets political, but it doesn't have to be something related to a country or not. I'm just saying, what would you think that would be problems related to the use of this technology? Let's say CRISPR-Cas9. I was in Shenzhen and the guy was there. He just made this. But it doesn't have to be Shenzhen. This will could happen everywhere. So anybody, we've seen it in books every time. you know, the mad professor, the mad doctor. This is a stereotype of science fiction. So give them a technology, and something will go wrong. You know, science fiction doesn't have to predict the flying cars. Science fiction has to predict the car accident. These kind of things when things go wrong. So what things could go wrong for you?
Well, I got nothing to go wrong. I'm a businessman.
Yeah, but also investments can go wrong.
But I think science fiction reminds us everything has both sides, with good sides or bad sides. It reminds people that we need to open our eyes, open our mind to think about our future more than just think about your own self, your own country.
Okay, this about my country made me think about something that I've seen in China that is very much like in Italy, at least some things. The family. The family is still a very important thing in China.
Yeah.
I've seen many stories revolving about human relationship, our technology, especially in Xiaojia and her science fiction that is called porridge science fiction, which is very soft, very mild, very contaminated with romance, with human relationship, family ties, these kind of things. So this is like, is it true? I mean, because I've also seen a big presence of women in. Happy, I'm very glad about that. I do think we need more female voices, many, many more. Is it true? Is it a trend? Is it?
I think it's a trend. It is true, but it is trend that the female is going to be more important than the past time.
Yeah, yesterday we talked about this also with other guests, saying that the development of a country is given by the condition of the female, and I totally agree with that. So for this reason, I really appreciate when I can read a very nice science fiction story written by a female writer. We miss it, and it's something that really makes our reality more complete, I think.
Well, in Shenzhen, we do have a very famous sci-fi writer, so younger writers. She was born in Shenzhen and studied in Canada, then UK, and back to Shenzhen, worked for Tencent. She's very typical new writers that got well-educated with well-rich family, and they don't never worry about money. They focus on what they are interested in.
What's her name?
Nuo Nuo Wang. Okay. She got book published this year. I can introduce to you. She might be I think it's totally different from Hao Jingfang.
Okay.
Different type of Hao Jingfang. Hao Jingfang's work, like, you have to Hao Jingfang's work is more related to social kind of things, but Nuo Nuo Wang's work is more about internal himself.
All right, I'll check her out.
You check her out.
Yeah, sure. You mentioned this thing about studying abroad. You also studied outside China, right?
Oh yeah, I've been United States for a couple of years.
And I've seen this trend of calling back the people that were studying abroad, you know, having a sort of come back to your original, come back to your main. No, you say no. Okay. I mean, is it true that after the diaspora, after the going out, the immigration to other countries, now China is trying to attract the people back to their country to contribute to the progress and development of the country?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I've seen the program also, you know.
It's called...
Don't open your startup somewhere, but open it here. Right?
A program, the China government had a program called 1,000 People Plan.
1,000 People Plan?
Yeah, they're calling the overseas returnees back to China. Well, I mean, high-ending scientist, artist, you know, that kind of people.
Okay.
1,000 a year. That's called 1,000 people, 1,000 tenants plan.
So it's a fixed number, or it's almost fixed number. Okay. I might have other things, but ci sono domande, poi vengono tradotte, non siate timidi, insomma, potete contribuire e interrompere quando volete, insomma, se avete curiosità, domande. Abbiamo ancora una decina di minuti. Prego.
Well, that's quite tough for me to answer your questions because, I'm not a writer, but I can. Well, in China, we do have some, you know, scenarios that really related to sci-fi, science fictions. Well, I've been Changsha for a couple times. I never seen that place. Oh, so I don't know. Sorry,
but I can add that as a science fiction writer, it's really striking these differences, this contradiction. You really feel that you are pulled by different forces, and that's one of the things of creativity, tearing the tissue of reality and see something through that. So that is really something that opens up some doors because your perceptions are extreme. You see the old rusty bike or you see an electric motorbike. I've seen an electric motorbike with the wired. The motorbike was on the street. Then there was the window, and then there was the wire going into the house, and it was plugged into the house. It was so cool. So I've made a picture because, you know, the guy had the plug in his house and it was out of the window and down the stairs and then it plugged into the motorbike, electric. Plug and play, you know. But that's really something we don't have. We don't have many electric motorcycles. I was also touched by that because here we have many motorbikes, But if you go into China probably 10 years ago, and I was in Vietnam 15 years ago, and there was a huge number of polluting motorbikes. Now all these motorbikes are gone, all silent. No, you see the, but they're all silent. They don't make one noise, nothing. And they're all electric. Yeah. So you
same happening in Shenzhen too.
Yeah, but here not. And I was like, when we change our motorbikes,
you gotta in Italy, I mean, ask your government to put more money.
I don't get an answer though. That I don't get an answer.
Well, I think the part reason that I couldn't answer that person's question is that I didn't live in Changsha, because Shenzhen is very special city in China, that everything is pretty new and modernized. So that kind of old things we never
see. In Beijing, you see the Hutong, the little streets,
of course,
and then you see the skyscraper hovering, right. And with the crazy thing is when you think you've seen skyscraper with illumination, with lights. But there, they don't have lights. They have movies, huge thing moving, like Christmas tree with all pictures and dynamics and commercials and advertisements. You see the classic cyberpunk atmosphere. So it's there. It's already there. It's Blade Runner 2049 already there. Sono altre domande? No. Okay, Jean.
This discussion about electric vehicles made me think. No, really. You may know that in Italy, starting this year, finally, the government is giving incentives for people buying electric vehicles. And some other politicians are saying, no, this is wrong because we are not helping the local car industry, because the local car makers don't do electric cars. We'll only help, and they will move their production to China if we give incentives to electric technology. And of course, they don't know that China has even more impressive policies for increasing the number of electric vehicles. Apart from this joke, what I wanted to ask was, did the Chinese science fiction community help the government in seeing the problems of the future and make policies such as this one, such as increasing electric vehicles? Thank you.
Well, thank you for your questions. I'm kind of nervous because I don't think this question could be answered by a person like me. Well, but I do can answer your question. Is in China, sci-fi writers might not have channels to talk with government that you can affect in the government policy. The policy that you mentioned above should be, you know, made it by the governors or local agency, local government agency, the officer or the outsourcing part of the policy that have professional guys to answer the question, not sci-fi writers. But sci-fi writers do remind us.
Yeah, but I can tell you that maybe not at such a high level of being policy makers, of course, or policy consultants, but they are asked things. Chen Chufan told me that he's been asked many things by many different kind of people. They are giving science fiction writers a kind of prophet dress, you know. And I don't know if it's good or bad, but they are doing this. They think that this lack of vision of the future must be fulfilled by somebody. And who's better than that than somebody that is always with his head and his, you know, heart in the future? I don't know if it's the right thing to do, but they are doing it.
Well, big companies like Microsoft, or in China we have big company.
Wanda.
Not Wanda.
Yeah.
Tencent. Tencent, the IT company Tencent, they hire some of the sci-fi writers to do some works with the IT department to see what is the technology goals for the future. So your question is how sci-fi film in China can affect the younger generations in China?
How the freedom of imagination in the science fiction can affect also the writing of movies? Is it, or is there's a problem related to the, you know, self-censorship or sensible themes that cannot be filmed?
Freedom.
Yeah, in producing films, is there a limit of this?
Well, it's also it's very strict limited in China. If you want to be more freedom, well, that's kind of tough.
Yeah, it's trying to say that there are issues, of course. But I would say that the biggest the investment, the stricter is the imagination you can apply, and that doesn't apply to China. It's applied to also to any other. So the biggest investment, the more politically correct you have to be, because mass market involves this watering issues, this making it, you know, easily understandable and easily acceptable by everybody. So the box office is about that. Another thing is independent movies or independent industry or independent productions. They're in everywhere. So I think it is not related to China. It is related to the industry. The level of your imagination is strictly related to the level of how many people you want to impact, I think, and it's difficult. Of course, there is still an issue, okay? But Some think about Ultimo Tango a Parigi, right? It created such a scandal, but then it took a lot of time to be accepted by everybody. Please, do you can.
I agree with that.
Yes. No. Yes.
I think it's time to.
Yes. It's time.
Can we talk later?
Yes, we can talk about it later. Thank you. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you, Frank.
Thank you.
Avete ascoltato Fantascientificast, podcast di fantascienza e cronache della galassia, da un'idea di Paolo Bianchi e Omar Serafidi, con il contributo cibernetico del Cylon Prof Massimo De Santo. Potete seguirci ed interagire con noi sul nostro sito fantascientificast.it, su Facebook alla pagina Fantascientificast, su Twitter sul profilo @fantascicast, sul nostro canale Telegram t.me/fantascientificast, sulla nostra community Telegram t.me/fsccommunity. Se siete particolarmente timidi, potete utilizzare la vecchia, cara e affidabile posta elettronica scrivendoci all'indirizzo redazione@fantascientificas.it. Tutte le puntate sono disponibili sul nostro sito, su Apple iTunes, su Spotify e su Podbean all'indirizzo podcast.fantascientificas.it. Se volete, potete lasciarci una valutazione a 5 stelle su Apple iTunes ed offrirci una birra romulana o un gotto esplosivo pangalattico, sostenendoci tramite una donazione PayPal utilizzando l'apposito pulsante sul nostro sito. Fantascientificast è una produzione amatoriale. Non si intende infrangere alcun copyright, i cui diritti appartengono ai rispettivi detentori. L'autorizzazione SIAE 5612I5359. Nessun byte e nessun tribolo sono stati maltrattati durante la produzione di questo podcast. Alexa 4 e l'equipaggio di Fantascientificast vi augurano lunga vita e prosperità e vi danno appuntamento alla prossima puntata lungo la rotta di Kessel.
Settimo simbolo inserito nel computer. Blocco 1 pronto. Blocco 1 posizionato.
Potenza erogata 23%. Così.
Blocco 2 è pronto.
Attivato.
Blocco 2 posizionato.
Siamo al 35%.
Arme rosse, evacuare l'area intorno allo Stargate.
Liberate l'area, torniamo da voi, chiudo le porta.
Andiamo, sbrigate.
C'era quello sotto la grande pietra?
Sì. Mio padre lo trovò nel 1928. È fatto di un minerale che non si trova sulla Terra.
Blocco 5 posizionato.
75%.
Blocco 6 pronto. Blocco 6 posizionato.
Non eravamo mai riusciti ad andare oltre nella sequenza.
Blocco 7 è pronto.
Pronto, attivato.
Blocco 7 è posizionato.
Un'energia terribile.